Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of The Next 4 Years, the show about surviving the young adult life. My name is Connor Payton, and I'll be your host. This show features in-depth interviews and conversations with friends, coworkers, and other young adults regarding life post-college. Hopefully you'll laugh, hopefully you'll cry, but most of all, hopefully you'll learn something and be able to apply it to your own life. I just want to take a quick second to thank everyone who has listened to the first few episodes of this podcast. I've had so many people send me messages about how much they love the content and have already started applying some of the topics covered into their own lives. I really appreciate everyone listening and hope you continue to do so. If I could just ask for a small favor for you to leave a 5-star review on iTunes, it will really help people find the show and then we can get the content out to more listeners. I'll give you a shout out on a future episode as a way of saying thanks. My guest today is my good friend Brielle DeGroote. Brielle graduated from TCU in 2014, but she is not originally from Texas. She grew up on a dairy farm in Central California and now lives in New York City. We cover what it is like to live in the Big Apple, how to find your edge, and the importance of asking for career help. I hope you enjoy.
This is The Next 4 Years with Connor Payton.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Next 4 Years. I'm joined by my good friend, Brielle DeGroote. Brielle, how are you?
I'm good, Connor. How are you?
I'm awesome. You know, I'm just hanging down here in little old Dallas, still hanging out in Texas these days. But you are in the big NYC, huh?
I am. That's correct. Can you believe it's almost been 3 years for me?
Wait, right, because you were you graduated a year before me. That's incredible. 3 years out of college.
I know, it's insane, right?
Yeah. So we met each other back in college, but actually before that, because you were the first ever TCU student. For the listeners who don't know, I attended Texas Christian University in Fort Worth, and you were the first ever TCU student I ever met.
Yeah, obviously the first is best.
I definitely agree with that. You know, you kind of set a tone for college before I even got to go there and experience it, because what TCU does, and a lot of colleges do this, is they set up meet and greets for the students who are out of state to meet some of the current students. And the incoming students to meet some of the current students. And so we went to the Southern California one. And that's where I met you, and you really set a nice tone for me there.
What exactly was that tone that I set for you?
I don't think it's any kind of secret, but you have a very vibrant personality, and you just made the idea of going to college, and where I met, you know, I saw that there were students like you there. I knew I would have fun, you know?
Yeah, Connor, I was pretty excited when I met you, too. You're a good one. We're going to keep you around.
I appreciate that. You went to TCU, you were the year before me, and what did you major in while at college?
So I majored in strategic communications, which focuses primarily on advertising and public relations, and then I also had a minor in political science.
So what college is the strategic communications major in? That's like general communications college, or what is it?
Yeah, that's in the Schieffer School of Journalism. So Bob Schieffer, who was a TCU alum, who hosted State of the Union for years in D.C., it was technically his school that he, you know, really made a big deal and put on the map. So Ad PR kind of fell within that whole journalism communication side of things rather than comm studies, I guess, is what a lot of people may mistake it for. Because our focus was primarily on, you know, actual advertising and creative strategy and media strategy and a lot of the math and science behind it rather than just overall, like, interpersonal communication. They're two very, very different things.
Very interesting. And what inspired you to go into that field?
You know, that's really funny that you asked me that because we were actually talking about this at work today.
Ah.
So I think that I just really got to love creative first. And then I thought that initially I wanted to pursue that and do some sort of graphic design in some way. But then as I was just going into college and started taking new electives and new classes, I realized that the strategy behind it and the science that is advertising is what appealed most to me. So I just really dove into it in college, not just within my classes, but in terms of internships too, because I figured, hey, if this is something I think I want to do for the rest of my life, I should probably try it out. So just based off of doing internship after internship, I kind of just figured out what it was that I really wanted to do. And now here I am.
That's really cool that you kind of took a shot at this, and it's something that you've really stuck with through the years. We'll get into your career in a bit, but it's not like you jumped around majors like I think most students do, or even when you graduate, go into a different field. It's clear that this is a passion of yours, and you've really stuck with it.
Yeah, and, you know, it never really was something that I thought about switching majors. I just kind of knew, yeah, really early on. I guess I was one of the lucky ones, because I know it can be very difficult for a lot of people, but I think I just knew that I loved communicating with people and working with people and working in a more like vibrant atmosphere, and advertising really just envelops all of it. So yeah, I mean, I was one of the lucky ones that figured it out sooner rather than later, so that I certainly didn't waste any time. I think maybe had I did, or if it took me a little bit longer to figure it out, I may not be where I am now, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, everyone comes into it on their own, and you just kind of hope for the best, and you just have to take a chance to figure it out.
That's really interesting you say that. I guess I was kind of lucky in the sense of I started off as a double major. I was the film, television, digital media with an emphasis in sports broadcast major, and I was a business major. And I knew after my first semester that the business thing was just not for me. I was not really interested in finishing that business major. So I dropped it down to a minor, actually picked up a journalism major that I wasn't going to complete in time. So I ended up dropping that down to a minor too. But I guess I did have that film, television, digital media, FTDM, we called it at TCU, major that I got to stick with through the whole time. But it wasn't like you, I suppose, where you just had your thing going and you stuck with it. So obviously college isn't just about the studies. You were involved in multiple activities. Can you go over those, including, I know you're in a sorority.
Yeah, so I definitely, you know, dove into that whole Greek life. It was a really good way for me to just meet new people, you know, especially going to a school out of state that was a little bit larger. But outside of Greek life, I also did Student Foundation, which was really involved with prospective students and alumni. So I loved just being able to work with so many different people and really just sell the university. But it wasn't a hard thing to do, because we all loved TCU so much that talking about it and sharing it with other people and sharing your experiences was just so fun. And even just, you know, going to those events where I met you and doing all these extra things, like, it just really made it that much more fun and my experience at TCU that much more enriched with different types of people and just different opportunities. But then on top of that, I really did dive into my actual major too, in terms of foundations or chapters or societies, anything like that.
What did that involve out of class? Like, was that extra meetings or was it actually internships?
Yeah, so it was a little bit of both, right? So within the certain chapters within our major, you would have like a meeting maybe every other week just to go over the new things happening in your industry, things that we could do to make sure that our chapter was being recognized. And then also, like, it just really opened the door to opportunities, because a lot of the times internships or places looking for prospective interns would go to those certain societies in the university first, because they know that those are the engaged students. So I would definitely recommend that. It opened some doors for me, or at least just got me thinking about things that I would have maybe not thought about initially. You know, like, they set up tours and meetings with ad agencies and brand managers and all of these other professionals in your field. So you really got that firsthand experience that you really wouldn't have exposure to if you weren't involved in something.
Yeah, very interesting. That's a good note for people, that if you really love your studies and your major, it's important not to just go to class and show up and even study for the tests and get an A. You kind of need to do more than that. That dates all the way back to high school, where they say, you know, you got to do community service and you got to play a sport or do, you know, join clubs, whatever it is. It carries over into college, and that's important to end up finding a job afterwards, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you really hit it right on the spot with that, because, you know, our world has evolved so much, and going to college isn't a special thing anymore. It's a thing that's required. You know, I mean, at least for my parents, like, they didn't even go to college because they didn't need to. But for us in our generation, it was a no-brainer. It wasn't even a question that was on the table. So I think, too, with how much our world has evolved and how much our education system has evolved, it's like you need to constantly get the next best shiny diploma to make you stand out that much more. So by being more involved, it sets you that much further apart than anyone else who's walking across the stage with you within that year, because so many of us, thousands of us, are entering the job field all at the exact same time. So the competition is so high that you constantly need to be thinking of, like, what's going to give you that extra edge and what's going to give you that extra, you know, 2 minutes talking to a recruiter or someone else in your field just to get you in the door.
What do you think your extra edge was? Because you do have a very cool job, and we'll hit that in a second, but what do you think your extra edge was that maybe got you an extra look?
I think my extra edge was a lot of my activities and a lot of my experiences and a lot of my experience, because I did have a lot of internships in college, not necessarily because I was worried that I wouldn't be able to find a job. I think part of it is that, you know, part of it, you're scared, you're paranoid, you feel like I need to have experience to be even taken seriously, which I would say, yes, that's part of it. But also, like, I studied abroad, you know, and that added a lot more just experience and well-roundedness and just more culture and depth to, I guess, my resume and just how I am as a person, being able to relate that back to a lot of things in the workplace and just being kind of like that adventurous person. I think that definitely helps. But I also think just networking like crazy, you know, having internships and getting that valuable experience is one thing, but the people that you meet while you're doing it is that much more valuable. Because if you think about it, you can apply to a million places all over the place and you could think you have the edge. But if a recruiter is getting, you know, like hundreds of thousands of applicants each day, and then they have a pile of those, and then they have a pile of 50 that are maybe referrals or people who already are internally working with them and say, hey, I have this, maybe check this girl out or check this guy out. I mean, which one do you think, which pile are they going to pick first?
Exactly. You
know? So it's just like it's a pre-vetting process when you already have that internal referral. So I think just your edge, part of your edge will be your experience, but your sharper edge, I guess, is those people that you meet amongst all of those experiences that are going to help you down the road. Because honestly, everybody is willing to help you. You just got to be brave enough to ask.
Was there anybody in particular that you did ask for help upon graduation in order to get your position?
Yeah, definitely. For me, you know, I knew that I wanted to move to New York. That was the goal. That was the only place I was applying because it was something I wanted to do for myself. I wanted to try it because had I didn't, I always would have wondered what if. And I was actually one day just talking to my advisor and was saying, hey, like, this is what I want to do. Do you know anyone? Do you have any other advice? And she said, yeah, actually, there is a student who graduated like 6 years ago. So somebody I never even knew, but I was connected to because of my advisor and because of the TCU network. And I just reached out to her and we started talking, and she kind of was that pre-vetting process, and she was the one who actually passed along my resume to where I still currently work.
Wow. So you really actually used the system that TCU provided, and a lot of colleges probably do that, but you really took advantage of it.
Yeah, you know, I think there's so many resources that are available, but people either just don't know about them or they're too afraid to ask for help. And I think that once you overcome that, I don't know if it's a hurdle or that bump in the road where you're too afraid to ask for help or ask someone, once you get over that, like, it just opens up the horizon of possibilities for you because, like I said, everyone is always willing to help. You just have to be brave enough to ask. I've even had people ask me now, and I'm like, of course I will help you. Somebody helped me, so it's only right for me to return the favor.
Right. It is like a paying it forward kind of thing. That's great that you're able to ask for help. And it's important for people to realize that that's what they're going to have to do to put themselves in a place that they want to be. And then they'll have the opportunity to help others.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so you live in New York City now. That's a big change from Fort Worth, Texas, but it's an even bigger change from where you grew up, Bakersfield, California, correct?
Correct.
Can you tell the listeners a little bit about Bakersfield, California? I'm from Los Angeles, California, and I think most people know what that's like. Bakersfield's a little different.
So, it's very different. And I even say Bakersfield because that's the next largest city to where I actually grew up.
Oh, it wasn't really Bakersfield.
No, it was in between Bakersfield and Fresno. And even maybe 20 times smaller town that was called Pixley, California. Very difficult to find on a map, as you can imagine. I actually grew up on a dairy farm. So if you've ever seen Sweet Home Alabama, you can probably just imagine what that life is like.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wouldn't trade it for the world. I loved it. I still love it. It's amazing when I go home. It honestly is the best conversation starter. It's the most, I guess, stereotypical small town girl moves to the big city, but it's my thing now. You know, I've owned it. I'm working it. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was a dairy farm. So you obviously had cows around. What other, I guess, farm things did you have around there? Other animals? Did you actually have to do work out there in your free time?
So I didn't have to do the actual work. Thankful for eternity to my dad for that. But we did help out in the office a lot, just helping around the house, doing things. Yeah, I mean, it was primarily cows. We had a couple horses for a little while. And, I mean, the business was to sell your milk. So we had a lot of just dairy cows. They paid the bills. Mm-hmm. I can honestly say I'm probably one of the very few, or if not only, person in New York City who knows how to milk a cow, but
well, that's a claim to fame, actually. The only person in New York City. You should try to find someone else.
Should I take a poll?
You should.
Submit it to the New York Times and ask if anybody else knows how to milk a cow.
You really should. That'd be really interesting. Or if any of the listeners live in New York City and they know how to milk a cow, or at least know somebody who does there, let Brielle know. She's there.
Yeah. We can, like, go to a petting zoo or something together, and we can teach everyone else.
Cool. So, after college, you did move to New York City, the big city. You work for Empowering Media, is that correct?
Yeah. So, it was formerly known as Empower Media. It's essentially Kara, which is a part of Dentsu Aegis Network, and it's a pretty large global media agency. We had initially been named as a subsidiary of which was Empower Media, because we specifically work on the Microsoft business.
Okay.
And at the time, Kara had PlayStation, so we weren't able to be within the same building or entity per se. So we were known as Empowering Media, but have since merged back into Kara.
Okay, and you started as an assistant. What were your duties, I guess, when you first got there? Because I know you've kind of moved up the ladder pretty quickly for a... Are you 24 or 25?
I'm 24.
For a 24-year-old, you've moved up really quickly, and now you're a senior associate. What did you start off doing as an assistant?
A lot of things. You do kind of just everything random that needs to get done.
Sure,
for the sake of the team.
Right.
I guess, well, so I specifically work in digital media planning. And so for a lot of that, you know, which I guess people don't really know what that is, which is totally makes sense. But if you were to go on any sort of website and you see an ad, you know, just an ad anywhere on the page, essentially we are the ones who have to put it there. And everything is tracked always, you know, how many impressions, how many clicks, how many all of this. So within our campaigns, there would be thousands of placements. And each one of those placements gets a name. You know, it's an actual ad. It's what we call trafficking. So it's a lot of work in Excel. It's a lot of copy and paste. It's a lot of screenshot decks. It's a lot of trial and error. It's a lot of Q&A. And it's a lot of just learning. You know, you're an assistant. Right. They don't really expect you to come in knowing as much as they do. So you just, you sit and you observe and you're a sponge and you learn and you be tenacious. You be as proactive as humanly possible. And, you know, you really just support the team.
So just to try to clarify exactly really what you guys do, are you guys going to other websites and taking Microsoft ads and giving them to websites to put up? Or are you guys selling anything?
So we're the ones buying everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
So buying for Microsoft.
Websites, yeah. So specific websites have inventory, which they call their ad inventory, that they come to us wanting to sell. So it's our job to put together the best possible placements for our target audience, who we want to target with any sort of Microsoft content. And based off of that, you know, there's a bunch of planning. Everyone works so hard, puts together an amazing campaign. And we're essentially the ones buying that inventory from our partners or our different websites, publishers, and making sure that once everything's bought, that everything that was essentially promised to us is being fulfilled. So, you know, if we bought a whole site-wide takeover on a website one day, then we need to make sure everything is tagged and tracked and showing up properly and clicking to the right web page. So it's a lot of back and forth, a lot of working just with different websites, a lot of working with your internal teams to make sure everything is running smoothly. And to help maybe simplify what I do now, I primarily work on a lot of our social business. So anything that you would see that's an ad, you know, that says sponsored on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, that's primarily our team working on that. So it's essentially all the same thing. You know, you're buying that inventory from a website
right,
or from Facebook, and you're getting the message out there.
So that's what you do now as a senior associate?
Yes.
Okay. Why do you think you were able to move into this position fairly quickly? I know you have been there for approximately two and a half years now, but what do you think it was about you that upper level management really liked in your work ethic or whatever it was? And I know I just kind of asked you to flatter yourself.
To brag on myself a little bit? Yeah, just a little bit. So... yeah, I mean, I started out as an assistant, and I was an assistant for about a year when I was promoted, and I think just within that time, you just need to really expose yourself and promote yourself, because, you essentially want to get noticed for your hard work, right?
Of course.
And I think that a lot of that isn't just doing work correctly. It's about going above and beyond. It's about always asking if anybody needs help. It's about taking ownership over things. And I think really when you start to take ownership over things and be the person, I guess, just showing a lot of that initiative and responsibility, that's when they know, okay, she can handle or he can handle the next thing. And then you start to notice them throw more things at you. And I think it's them trying to figure out where you hit your breaking point, like just how much can they handle. But if you pass those with flying colors and you say, okay, I got this, or okay, let's prioritize this. It's just all about showing that you're thinking of the next thing or thinking of the next level. I think just having a lot of that proactivity and initiative and just really taking responsibility over things that you initially were just tasked to do, and now you're the one going after it before someone tells you, I think that's kind of at that level, at least, that's what's really going to set you apart.
I completely agree. It's not just about paying your dues over time, right? I had my first boss after college kind of tell me this, that it's not just about, you know, showing up to work and eventually in a year or two, you'll get promoted just by showing up. It's about doing high quality work, like you were saying, going above and beyond what is expected of you so that upper level management, whoever it is, shows how valuable you really are and that you'll bring that extra level of excitement and passion to the job. And I guess results, because that's what most businesses are all about, right? Is producing results, that you're able to show that you'll do that at the higher level too.
Yeah. And I think too, just to add to that, it's, you work in such a team atmosphere. So you gotta be a team player. You know, it's like, it's one thing to go above and beyond and try and outshine the others. But if you're not a team player, then that's gonna hurt you more than anything else.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's a good note, to be a team player. Okay, so you live in New York City. Where do you live, actually?
So I actually live in Manhattan.
Okay.
In Midtown. So I live in a little, I guess, I mean, it's not really, I don't know if, I would just say it's an area called Hell's Kitchen.
We know that from the comic books.
Oh, which comic book?
The Marvel series. This is me totally being nerdy here. Like Daredevil is from there, and
oh yeah, he was like, that was always like filmed in Hell's Kitchen, I think.
Yeah. Sorry, that's just me nerding out for a second.
It's okay, Connor. Obviously, I live in the coolest part of New York City.
Yeah.
It's
oh, fun. Absolutely. I have no doubt you would. So you live there. Do you have any roommates?
I do. I have one roommate who is actually one of my best friends from college.
Oh, who is it?
Highly recommend it.
Who is your roommate?
Shelby Ringdahl.
Oh, I know Shelby. That's great. Yeah. I live with one of my former college roommates, too. So I totally agree. It is a great thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think a lot of people go the random person route, especially in New York when it's very difficult to find a place to live to begin with, and you get a little desperate sometimes. But honestly, like, I kind of hit the jackpot. Not at first, so just so everyone knows, I don't get lucky with everything. I do actually work for everything that I have, but I really did get lucky with her being able to move up here just a year after me. And so now we've lived together for a little, almost 2 years. It's great.
So tell me about what New York City is really like, because I live in Dallas and it's a pretty big city compared to most of America, but it's certainly not Los Angeles or New York City. Can you go over kind of what you do in your free time there?
Sure. Well, I work a lot, so there is that aspect.
It sounds like it, sure.
It is a very big, you know, like, work hard, play hard mentality. But in my free time, you know, when the weather's nice, we like to, people actually do walk through the park. That is something that I've become accustomed to do.
It's not just a cliche movie thing. People really do that.
It's not. You know, I haven't had any, like, romantic strolls through the park like the cliche movies. But, you know, me and my friends definitely walk around.
Yeah.
So that's good. It's kind of just one of those things to get out of your apartment because you don't have a whole lot of space. So that is something that we actually do. And, you know, there's just always something going on. There's always like a festival or, you know, like last weekend it was Chinese New Year. So we just went down to like Flushing and Chinatown. And we're like, this is so cool because events like this don't just happen in any other city. And like there's always a barbecue festival or a whiskey tasting festival, you know. And not to say that all of my extracurriculars have to do with food or drinking, but it's just, you know, there's something about food and drinks that bring people together. And I think it's a really beautiful thing.
I think most of the listeners would agree with that.
Yeah. You know, it really does. It's like Thanksgiving every day, you know, but there's just always something new going on, which I think we always try and capitalize because I think one day, I don't know if I'll live here forever, but I just always try and live each weekend, at least when I do have that free time, to the fullest to make sure that I'm taking advantage of where I currently am and the state that I, you know, that I live. And any time that something's free, we definitely go.
Yeah. I wanted to get into that because New York City is not exactly a cheap place to live. How do you go about budgeting in your life? You said that you like to take advantage of free activities. Is there any tips that you really have to saving money in New York City?
So I know, you know, your rent is obviously going to be a huge bucket of your paycheck every single month. You know, that's
absolutely
a secret. But I would say that, you know, with every month, I definitely budget for that first because you know that that's a fixed cost. And then it's about having those extracurriculars, you know, but you need to kind of, you need to have self-control and you need to bucket whatever that is going to be for the month or for however your timeline works, whatever.
I would imagine self-control in New York City is something that's more difficult there than in other places around the country, though.
Yeah, because things are really expensive. You know, I'm not going to lie. Like, they are. I think sometimes it's a lot about give and take. So if I want to go and do this whole fun packed day that's going to cost me however much, then I'm like, okay, the next day I'm just going to chill and watch Netflix and maybe go for a run because that means I'm not spending any money today. Stuff like that. So, you know, I just kind of look towards what I'm going to be doing that week, whatever those plans are. And it's a lot about just give and take. You're not going to be able to do everything. And it's all just about living within your means, you know? And I think something that my parents always told me was, you know, two things. One, which is always live within your means. Don't try and have this super lavish, luxurious lifestyle if you can't afford it. Because you're just being foolish. Like, what's the point? If you're going to be stressed out about paying your bills, like, that's no way to live.
Right. It's better to be comfortable.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think you learn to shop sales and go to farmers markets that are going to be less expensive than a grocery store. And you figure out the tricks that are in your area. I think just some people aren't aware of it. And I think a really big thing, too, is, like, having friends and people who surround you within your same kind of financial state, you know, because sometimes if your friends are making a significant amount more than you or a significant amount less than you, they're not going to have the same options or ideas of fun or extra activities, because if it's something they can't do, it's something they can't do. And you need to respect that. But I think too, when you are surrounded by people who are very similar in your financial, you know, state, whatever right. That may be, it makes things a lot easier and a lot less awkward.
Right. Find that happy median between kind of, you know, taking care of people who are in different kind of financial brackets than you. And you might be in the lower, you know, sections sometimes, and just being able to say, hey, I can't participate in that. How about we go do this time? And then other times it'll be the opposite. But it's good to kind of find that median, huh?
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes you just have to say no, and that's okay. You know,
right.
I would love to go to the Knicks game with you, but I would also love not to spend $100 for an event that's only going to take 4 hours of my time.
Right, stuff and maybe like if that, they won a few more games, it'd be a little more inspiring to go.
Yeah, so it's just, it's all about give and take, and I also like to travel and see my friends a lot, but I can't do everything, you know? And it's about, hey, these three things are happening. What is the one that would be most beneficial for me to go to? And that's the one I do. You know, you can't do everything, and you learn to be okay with it.
It's important to realize at this stage in our lives, especially while you're young and single, that yourself has to come first, and you got to take care of yourself first. And peer pressure will exist after college. It doesn't end with school. And so, like you said, it's so important to say no. I really respect that. I want to go into transportation around there. How do you get to work?
It depends on the day, honestly. If it's really nice out, then I'll walk.
How many blocks is it?
Well, it's a few. I would say if I walk, it would take me at least a half hour to get to work. But if I'm not late, which is why I haven't really been walking to work lately, because I have been late a lot. but I think, I'm lucky that I have the capability to be able to walk to work. But otherwise, I just take the subway or the bus. I'll be honest, I never ever thought that I would ever take a bus to work. I thought it was like one of the tackiest things, but it's just a way of life. It's also really easy and convenient and super efficient. So I'm kind of mad that we judged it for so long, because it's actually really great. I highly recommend taking the bus places. It's also
interesting.
Really
cool.
I like became best friends with my bus driver, and anytime I'd be like running across the street to catch it, he just knew to wait for me. It like brought me back to my elementary school days. It was kind of great.
That's really interesting, and you've found a way to befriend him. How about the weather? I don't want to, you know, have kind of a dull conversation about weather, but it's freezing in New York. How do you deal with that?
You don't. Nah, you really don't. You layer and then you run.
Get that blood flow going.
Yeah, honestly, you look kind of ridiculous going to work, and then you have just like shoes under your desk that are more appropriate to wear in the office rather than your Uggs, which are like super ugly and super basic looking, but I don't even care because I'm like, my feet are warm, so leave me alone. But yeah, I mean, it's cold, but that's why so many people take the subway when it is snowing or raining or a lot colder, because less people are walking to work, which you really actually notice it getting a little bit more packed when the weather's not as great.
Is it significantly warmer in the subway? I mean, I'm sure because it's underground, but does it feel much warmer?
Oh my goodness, it is a furnace.
Wow.
But like not in a good way. It's in like a bad way, because you're like so bundled up and you're walking quickly because it's so cold that when you get down there, it's so hot that I have to like unzip everything, unlayer. Like I'm like basically sweating. And it's like I just ran a marathon because it's so hot down there and you have so many layers on. It's like you're having an internal fire in your body.
Wow.
And it's even worse in the summer. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I bet.
Everyone is like a sweaty mess. It's actually really disgusting. But New York is really great, and everyone should totally move here.
Right. I'm sure New York needs to increase its population a little bit. What would you recommend to people looking to move to New York? Like, say, you know, New York's such a city of opportunity. A lot of people just kind of pick up and move there without having a job or position ready for them. They kind of expect to go there and find it when they're there. Would you ever recommend that to somebody? I know you didn't really do that, but.
So I didn't do that, but I was about to do that.
Like you were set to move to New York. Like that is what you were going to do.
Yes, okay. I definitely was. So I was willing to take the risk It also, you kind of notice a trend, though, because, I mean, yes, I did get lucky that I was able to, you know, just seal the deal and get my job, and they allowed me enough time to move out here, but I had had a couple leads, you know, before that, that actually advanced pretty far, but you get to a certain point where everyone just said, okay, well, when you get to New York, give me a call back. And that was something that happened, you know, I'm going to be honest, more than once. So I started to think, well, do I just need to do it and move there?
It's a terrifying proposition.
It is terrifying. You know, like, what if I had been here for more than a few months and still didn't have anything? But it was a trend that so many people had done and so many people had told me that I had talked to who moved here. And just the fact that even, you know, employers were telling me that, I started to notice, like, wow, okay, maybe I need to just do it. So I think that, you know, it is a very big city of opportunity. There's always going to be jobs out there. It's just a matter of getting your foot in the door. So I think if people are gung-ho, headstrong, set on moving here, then you're just wasting time by waiting for something to come, you know, like, nothing's ever going to just come to you. Nothing's ever going to be easy. If it's what you want to do, then do it for yourself and then figure it out once you get here.
Yeah, that's a good note. Just kind of do what needs to be done to make your life happy. If you know what you want to do and it's not exactly lining up immediately, sometimes you got to take a chance, right?
Yeah, I mean, nothing's ever going to fall on your lap.
That's good. Okay, I have some more some general questions that I'm asking all of my guests. Feel free to take as much time you need to answer these. They're just a little more general and not specific to you. What were your general emotions, fears, excitements upon graduation?
I was really sad. I was really sad to leave my friends. I was really sad because majority, if not all of my friends, okay, no, actually all of my friends, stayed in Texas, and I was the only one who, you know, was just like, I want to do something new. And not saying that none of them didn't do anything new. Like, a lot of them moved to Austin or Dallas, which was super, super great. I just, for myself, you know, I just really was like, I want to do something new. I love Texas. I'm sad to leave Texas, but I just knew that if I didn't do something right away, then I never would, and I would have regretted it. But I was really sad. And, you know, sometimes it still is sad when all of them can see each other pretty frequently and are within driving distance of one another. You know, it's kind of a bummer and it feels a little lonely sometimes. But you still have to remember at the end of the day that you're happy too. And I think so many people get caught up in the sense that they think that everything is going to be the exact same after graduation.
Right.
But it's not, you know.
Of course.
I always thought, oh, they're going to see each other all the time. But, you know, that doesn't always happen. And the first time I went back to Texas to visit, and all of us were together. And I was like, oh, my goodness, this is what I'm missing out on. We could do this every weekend. But that's also not the reality of the situation. You know, we plan to all be there. It's not something that happens every weekend for them. It's not something that would have happened every weekend for me. So it's a little sad to graduate because you're not just, you know, hanging out with your friends 24/7. It's time to be an adult now and figure your life and move on to that next chapter. But as sad as it was to graduate, I honestly was so excited when I moved here. It's just a wonder of new possibilities, a wonder of new people. You kind of think back to when you were super excited to go to college. And your freshman year is just so exciting. You're doing all these new things. Like, it was very much so my freshman year of life. You know, you're just doing all of these things. You're not saying no to anything. You're like, yes, let's go do this.
That's
yes,
a good way to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you're learning things all over again. And you're hanging out with anyone who will hang out with you. And you're just trying to make new friends and figure out where your new, like, niche is going to be. And it was very much so, I said it even a couple times, like, people would laugh, and it's kind of funny, but it's honestly a really great way to look at it. It's just your freshman year of life.
That's what I wanted to talk about next. In college, you're kind of, in high school and throughout all of school, you're given friends because you have classmates and you join clubs and you join your fraternity and sorority, and you're kind of given friends just by affiliation. How do you make friends in the young adult life? Where do you personally actually meet people, or where would you recommend people make friends?
I think a really great place to start is with people that you work with. I think obviously certain environments may not encourage that or be easy, but for me it was a very casual, very just involved and fun loving, honestly, like, workplace, and we all just got along so well. And I think even as people evolved and have moved on to other jobs, like, I've just stayed in touch with all of them. I think that's a really great place to start. I think another great place is just reaching out to friends of friends who you may have a common thing. And, you know, so many people are moving here all the time, and so many more people than you ever realize are in the exact same bucket that you are. You think you're so alone. Well, there's about 20 other people within a 10-block radius who may be thinking the exact same thing. So sometimes you go to your, like, neighborhood bar and you just, like, strike up a conversation with someone else and this or that. And I think so many times you meet new people that are so cool, but you're just waiting for someone to make the first move because you're like, oh, well, maybe they didn't want to be friends with me. Maybe they didn't think I was cool. Well, guess what? That exact same person is thinking the exact same thing to you. You just, it's, in terms of going out there and, you know, it sounds so weird to be like, be aggressive, but, like, in a way you kind of just need to be like, hey, so that was really fun. You want to, like, maybe go to lunch or, like, grab coffee? And it's just like, that person is bound to be like, I'm so glad that person followed up. And, like, now this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Right. That's part of the reason I started this podcast, right? Because I felt pretty lonely in the first few months after graduation. And I know that I'm not the only one to feel that way. And there's tons of people who felt that way. And so that's kind of why I wanted to do this, so other people can kind of share and give their recommendations that lots of other people are in the same boat. And I think I really like that you said that there, that it might seem awkward to ask somebody to hang out when you don't really know them in just even a friendly way. You know, they probably want you to. Everyone's encouraged by just more interaction.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, you know, kind of just like freshman year. Hey, you had a class with someone? Okay, that's the one level of commonality, and that's all you need. Mm-hmm. You know, then you'd be like, hey, want to go grab lunch in the blue? Hey, want to meet up at the library later? And now you're just like striking up a conversation and striking up a friendship based off of one thing you have in common. And that's all it really takes, you know? It's like, okay, we work together. That's our one point of commonality. Right. Or, hey, we're both from Texas. Hey, we're both from California. You know, it doesn't need to be this big, huge thing. It only takes one thing to just, like, spark that conversation. And I feel like I'm making it sound a lot easier than it is. Because it is hard, and sometimes it's really uncomfortable. But what are you going to do? Are you just going to sit in your apartment by yourself and have a pity party? Like, that's not helping anyone. So it may be uncomfortable for 5 minutes or for an hour, but that person could be, like, the next best friend and your bridesmaid or groomsman in your wedding. Like, you never know.
Yeah, exactly. It, like you said, it's not awkward to do that in college. It doesn't need to be awkward to do that in the young adult life. That's exactly important to remember. Okay, this next question is really fun. Do you date? And if so, where do you meet people?
Okay, wow. Like, you want to just air my dirty laundry in front of, like, all these people? Kidding. Wow, this is actually
if you don't want to share, we don't have to. We can move on.
No, that's okay, Connor. I'm doing this because I love you as a person. I would say that a lot of it is, like, friends of friends, because it's one thing to, I don't know, like, some people do. They just, like, meet strangers in a bar and, like, that it works. I've never personally been like that. I think a lot of the times you kind of want that pre-vet of like, oh, well, they're a friend of a friend, so like, they won't kill me. So like, yeah, let's go to dinner.
Right, that's reassuring. At least they won't kill me.
Well, yeah, you know, like, I watch SVU. You never know. So, I mean, that's always kind of been my starting point, I guess.
Friends of friends.
Yeah, friends of friends. Or, you know, it's just, I've been a huge proponent of, like, date someone that you're friends with first. So even just people that I've met and we've become friends and we're like, oh, could this be more? Maybe. Let's try it. Okay, not so much. But that's fine because you're still cool and we're still friends. I think, too, that's a big thing where dating, when you're no longer in college, you don't have the gossip. You don't have the people and your friends looking and staring at you from across the blue or your class or the party. You kind of can just come and go and do it how it, like, do what works for you. I don't know. Like, I feel like there's no rule book anymore. You kind of just, you do what, yeah, I don't know. You do what works for you. You don't need to do it by, oh, my friend said this, my friend said that. Oh, he used to date so-and-so. It's like, when you date as an adult, you kind of just have a really clean slate in a way. And you just kind of got to go for it.
Yeah, I like that. I like that note. You do have a clean slate upon graduation, and most of the people you meet won't really know your previous dating history, and that's really comfortable a lot of the times. So that's really cool. Okay, moving on. What are you passionate about outside of your job? I know that's kind of a vague question, but what do you like to? What are you passionate about? I guess. Besides marketing and PR, like, what would you be doing if you didn't have to go to work all the time?
Well, I actually like to volunteer. It was never really something I did in college per se, but it was just another really great way to get plugged into New York and make it feel like it's my home. I think it's one thing to be involved with, like, you know, have a really strong group of friends and all of that, but I think when you move somewhere new, you need to find a way to connect to that place. And for me, it was definitely by volunteering because you felt like, okay, I'm putting stakes in the ground. Like, I'm volunteering my time to make New York better or help people in New York. Just, like, making sure that you always stay in love with where you live. And I think for me, that was by volunteering in my community. And that was also by, you know, just always going and trying new things, you know, whether that be a new class or going on like a cruise in the middle of the day or, yeah. I mean, I think I always say, like, I just always want to be in a state of love with New York. If I ever don't feel that, then it's not going to make me happy to be here. And I think, yeah, I think I'm passionate about doing things that make me uncomfortable.
It seems like you're also just kind of passionate about where you live, which is interesting. It's not so much the what. It is a lot of the where for you.
Yeah, I would agree with that, honestly. I think so many people will say, oh, like, I hate living here or there. Oh, I wish I could have done that. Or I wish I could have moved somewhere. Or I wish I could have done something different. And I just always kind of think, I'm like, well, you could have. So
right.
You just gotta do things that make you uncomfortable.
Yeah, it brings out parts of you that you don't necessarily know you have a lot of the times, and that could help you find other passions, right? That you didn't know you have. Okay.
No, definitely.
What do you wish you knew upon graduation that you knew you know now?
Oh, that's a good one. What do I wish I knew?
We can come back to it if you want to.
Let me think about that one.
Sure. Not that this one's a whole lot easier to answer, but what do you think you should start, stop, and keep doing to become the person you want to be? So just either little activities, maybe wake up 30 extra minutes, maybe it's, I don't know, go out to the bars one more time. a week, whatever it is, what do you think you should start, stop, and keep doing?
I think I should stop making work an excuse.
Right. That's important. A lot of people do that.
Yeah, I think it's very easy to say, oh, sorry, I can't, I'm working, or, oh, I'm tired from work. I think I should stop using, you know, the stress of work or the exhaustion of work as an excuse. I think I should stop that. I think I should keep doing things that make me uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an opportunity for you to learn a lot about yourself. And even if you learn it's something you don't like, that's still a great thing. Learning that you don't like things is just as important as learning that you do like things. And start doing.
It could be something just like, you say that you have been showing up late, recently, and you value walking to work. Maybe you want to wake up a little early. Whatever it is.
Yeah, I think I should maybe start making better use of my mornings and better use of my me time.
Okay.
Because I think even though you get, sometimes people get lonely or they get bored or they don't want to be alone, I think it's really important to have your you time to rest and recharge and figure out, even if you want to sit and watch Netflix in the morning while you drink your coffee or go for a run or this or that, I think it's really important to have time for yourself. And also, I think things I want to start doing is having a constant state of learning, whether that's reading a book or taking a different class I guess that kind of goes with always trying new things, but yeah, I think maybe start taking more time for myself.
Yeah, me time's important.
Yeah.
Something that I've kind of gotten really into recently is that me time is really defined by doing anything where you wouldn't rather be doing something else. So me time doesn't have to be sitting on the couch by yourself, reading a book or watching Netflix. Me time could be out with friends, and as long as you don't wish you were doing anything else, that counts as me time. That's just my own two cents and my own philosophy on things.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think also kind of to build off of that, this is something I actually tell my roommate pretty frequently because she's a huge people pleaser and she never wants anyone to feel left out or be upset. And I think that part of just surviving is being a little selfish. You have to be a little selfish sometimes, and that's okay. Because if you're not taking care of yourself, then you certainly can't take care of anyone else. And if you're not happy, then what's the point,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, take care of yourself. That's good. Okay, moving on. What are your future plans? Do you have a 6-month or a 5-year or 10-year plan, whatever it is? Do you have some kind of future goals, plans?
Well, I think my initial goals were to, just advance in your career. And I think that's something that everybody kind of puts on, they're like, senior activity, what is your 5-year plan? Graduate, get a job, get promoted. I mean, I would think that's just a constant state of evolution, but definitely just keep advancing in my career. And in terms of anything beyond that, I kind of just taking it in stride, one day at a time. I don't really have any plans to leave New York anytime soon, but you never know. Things can change. I'm pretty set for right now.
Yeah, it sounds like you certainly enjoy things, so why kind of change anything too quickly? That's interesting to hear. Okay, I told you I'd come back to it. What do you wish you knew upon graduation?
I wish I knew. Connor, this one's really hard.
I know, it's a good question. I thought about these for a while.
This is such a good question.
I'll give you what one of the previous guests said was taxes are a lot higher than you expect them to be.
Oh my God. Taxes are honestly, like, it's just absurd. Yeah, those kind of suck. I wish I knew that.
They tell you your whole life the only two things that are guaranteed are death and taxes, but you still don't know how much they're really going to be when you graduate. It's crazy. Like, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, and I think, oh, man. I feel like I really want to say something super insightful here. I just don't know what it is.
Well, that's all right. We can have you back on another time maybe, and hopefully you'll have something then. Okay, so I just have one more question then. How do you make the next 4 years as great as your college experience?
I think I may have touched on a lot of them. But I think it's just all about being a constant state of, like, evolution with yourself. And I think you need to just be okay with change. Because even when you look back at your freshman year versus your senior year, like, think about how many things change. And, you know, just because you're in this new phase of life where you're an adult and things don't seem like they're changing, like, they are. And I think it's just constantly being involved, constantly doing something exciting, making yourself uncomfortable, making the best out of any situation, taking risks. I think, you know, you live once and you kind of just gotta make do with the cards that you're dealt. And if you're not happy with it, then, like, do something to change it. You know, it's just life's too short to be unhappy. So even if you're scared, do it anyway.
I like that. I don't know. Be okay with change. That's great. Okay, so thank you so much for being on the show, Brielle. You've been a wonderful guest. How or where should people contact you if they want to ask you any more questions or something?
You can hit me up on my social profiles. I'm pretty social savvy nowadays.
Are you just on Facebook as Brielle DeGroot?
On Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. Check me out.
That's awesome. Okay, well, thank you so much again. This has been another episode of The Next 4 Years. We will see you next week. Thanks for listening.